with Tony Acero.
Yeah, I'm going to cut it right there because that's no longer accurate, and our overlord has not gotten around to making us a new intro yet. Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the first edition of the Raw Reaction for 2018 here on the Chairshot Radio Network. My name is Harry Broadhurst. I am your host. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
The only name that matters.
Fashionably late as always, Tony.
I feel like a good podcaster is never early and never late, but is always on time.
And the new third man in the booth, Andrew Ballas. Welcome, Andrew.
Nice to be aboard with you guys. Should be a fun time.
I hope I pronounced that correctly, because I make no promises that I did.
Close enough for government work.
We'll take it. Hey, Tony!
What's up?
Okay, so I know Los Angelitos?
Mexican.
Angelitos, did you know? Close enough. Anywho, I know you guys are just now welcoming back the National Football League. And not only are you guys welcoming back the National Football League, you guys are welcoming back playoff football to Los Angeles as well.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a welcome back. More of a, all right, I guess we'll take it.
Well, in the case of my team, it's a holy that thing happened. My Bills made the playoffs, Tony!
And you have the Bengals to thank for it.
Oh, did you see the, okay, so we talked about this before here, and this is just, in case you're wondering, Andrew, why we're talking football and not wrestling, the first couple of minutes of the show are usually just used to catch up with each other, so welcome to the crew. The Bills sent out on Twitter that we will be sending Buffalo Wings to Cincinnati.
That's fantastic.
Well, it's in the grand tradition of teams sending stuff to Buffalo when we knock other people out of the playoffs. It was a couple of years ago when the Bills were playing the Jets in the last week of the regular season, and we did to the Jets what the Bengals did to the Ravens. And Pittsburgh, who got in as the beneficiary of ours, sent the Bills an entire case full of Parmenti Brothers sandwiches.
Oh, that's cool.
So anywho, Andrew, welcome aboard. Tell everybody about yourself. They know about me and Tony. New Year, same old assholes.
Yeah, I understand that one. Okay, when it comes to football, my team of choice is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, yeah, they had a forgettable season, so let's not talk about their season right there. And I was never really a huge WWE, WWF mark. Obviously, until they became a monopoly, I was always more of a WCW guy. So it is definitely a humbling situation the last like 17 years, not having my WCW.
If it makes you feel any better, Andrew, as soon as we get off the air here, I have the Great American Bash 1992 queued to watch on the network.
I can watch it on the network, too. I subscribe, because how else am I going to actually watch NXT and the pay-per-views? It still hurts. It still hurts, man.
You subscribe? How much is it per month?
Really? Really? We're doing that?
I forget, Tony. That's a good question. That's been a running gag on this show ever since that started, because that started right around the time we did.
Oh,
I
yeah, I realized.
Wish there was someone that could remind me as to how much that is.
Yeah, they don't plug it every 25 minutes.
999 rubles.
Got a couple of rubles later.
They're charging in rubles now. After all, it is Rusev Day.
Well, yeah. Hopefully they can exchange into bitcoins.
And if you have Bitcoin, you're making bank. All right, shenanigans aside, what do you guys say we crack the top on this one here? Metaphorically, not literally, although I may have one planned literally for a little later on the show. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, boy.
All right, let me go ahead and minimize my browser here and open up the format so that way I don't look like a complete idiot.
Let me minimize my Pornhub here, and I've got the format too. We're good to go.
How was your New Year with Vanessa, Tony?
Oh, it was great. We had a good time.
I'm sure you did. Porn star books and all.
Scotch.
All right, let's do this here. We once again return to the three-man format here. So, gentlemen, let's open the show. Let's talk about Raw. And let's talk about the new Raw Tag Team Champions as of last Monday night on Christmas Day, as they actually did a title change on a live Christmas Day episode of Raw, which may have been the dumbest damn thing they could have done. But anyways, with Dean Ambrose out for an extended period of time, we see that Kurt Angle has filled his son, Jason Jordan, in as Seth Rollins' tag team partner, granting them a tag team title opportunity last week against The Bar, Sheamus and Cesaro. Jordan and Rollins take advantage of said opportunity as Jason Jordan picks up the pinfall with his back suplex to neckbreaker towards ugly fucking finisher that he does. And they end up becoming the new tag team champions. This week, we have... excuse me. We have Angle in the ring to start the show after a little bit of tete-a-tete backstage with Alexa Bliss. There's a joke there. I won't make it. And he is immediately interrupted by Sheamus and Cesaro, who are upset about the actions of last week prior. That takes us to Jason Jordan interrupting on Kurt's behalf and challenging Cesaro, leading to Seth Rollins coming out and letting Jason Jordan know, "What are you doing, you moron? You're coming out here into a one-on-two disadvantage. I have to come out here and save your ass because you're endangering my half of the tag team titles as well by doing this. Therefore, I will be in your corner for this match, though I expect you to lose." Your guys' thoughts on the opening segment, as well as the teased dissension already, as much as it was teased the week prior as well on Christmas Day, between new tag team championship partners, Jordan and Rollins. Tony, hit us first.
In a lot of ways, this was just like any other Raw. And considering it's the first day of a new year, you know, an attempt at something new would have been nice. But then I remember that I woke up this morning, took a shot of Jack, and then drank Mountain Dew. So, you know, sometimes change doesn't always happen right away. nonetheless, no, it wasn't anything extravagant. This was all opening segments. I'm not really sure what they're doing with the Seth Rollins, Jason Jordan relationship. You see little hints of Jordan being either an arrogant heel or a, you know, a singular person thrust into a tag team, but that doesn't make sense because he comes from a tag team. So his, you know, self-adulation and patting on the back kind of comes off a little weird if you consider his past as nothing but a tag team wrestler. It's weird to have Seth Rollins tell him how to be a tag team wrestler when that's what he's been doing for quite some time. But, of course, there's an argument for and against that. It was just something that I noticed. If we're rating the opening segment, it's, you know, opening segment out of 10. There's nothing glaring here. Although I do find that Kurt Angle stands really weird. It's like he's sitting on an invisible stool. You just can't see it. I don't know. It's awkward.
Andrew?
No, yeah. Kurt does stand a little weird. I agree with that one. But, yeah, the opening segment was any typical Raw thing, and then there's a match being made eventually, and stuff happens. I don't really know. I agree with all your points about the whole not knowing why they're teaching a tag team specialist how to be a tag team player. But the only thing I could see is maybe they're going to bring back the old legacy tagline, and all Jason Jordan stuff is going to say "born better," since now he's, you know, the spawn of Kurt Angle, so he just thinks he's above everything.
That'd be great.
Well, I mean, if you listen to his theme song, he is the next generation of great, the next generation of hate.
Yeah, I try not to listen to his theme song.
I got nothing. That's the best I had to answer to that, so therefore I'm going to go ahead and move on. The match itself sees Jason Jordan once again pick up another pinfall victory here creating his winning streak up to an entire 2 weeks in a row here on Monday Night Raw, as he is able to pin Cesaro clean in the ring. Oh, and can we also give thanks for the lack of Cesaro mouth guard tonight on Raw 2? I could actually understand everything he said. I bet that made your job a little bit easier over at 411 as well, Tony.
No, Cesaro and I have a really good relationship, so I always understand what he says.
I feel like Vanessa has something to say about it. Anywho, what
did
you guys think of the match itself?
Andrew, you could start.
No, the match was really good, but it was really slow. Like, the one thing that I've noticed with Jason Jordan's matches in general, regardless if it's tag or singles, is that this is boring chant, like, just pops up all the time with him because it's always the same slow, technical, amateur style, which he's really good at, and he's damn proficient with suplexes and, like, the Greco-Roman amateur style, but that's just not translating to the crowd, and it doesn't translate well on television, and, you know, it's just, it's fine for what it is, but no personality and a slow style, like, that's, that kind of reminds me of, like, all of the dogs on, like, Bret Hart. As good as he was, there's plenty of people that are going to say he wasn't the best there is the best there was the best there ever will be.
Tony?
You know, if 50 people went in, if there were a room of 50 people and you and Andrew went into that room and told all 50 how great I was, like how amazing I was, and just fucking tooted my horn and gave me verbal fellatio, and then I walked into the room 10 minutes later, do you know how many people would dislike me? Probably 49. Mainly because they're tired of hearing it. And no matter what I do when I walk into that room, no matter how impressive I may be, how likable, how joyous, how jovial I am, how cool I might be, how badass of a yo-yo expert I am, none of it would matter. Because there's already a preconceived notion of someone telling them what to do and them readily, you know, just doing the antithesis of it. That's exactly what happens with the WWE more than once, and Jordan is suffering from that. I mean, I've told you for months now, I think Jordan is amazing in the ring, and I think that given the right amount of energy, he could be something. But they told us that he was Kurt Angle's son. They told us that he was an amazing wrestler. They made him wrestle Roman Reigns, and then the commentary team blew his dick on air. Like, there was no way that we as viewers and audience members could say, hey, you know what? I like this guy. He's got something. Because it was too late. They already told us. They told us he has something. Look how well he's doing. Look what he could do. They did the same thing with Elias, just not at a higher level. And this is what happened. You get the audience turning against him. You get the audience just being disinterested. Because everything that we were supposed to attach ourselves to and learn and love about this guy was already told to us before we even got a chance to experience it properly. This match, for example, it's against Cesaro. Cesaro's amazing. There's no bad match. There's no such thing as a bad match with Cesaro. So it was a great match. It was awesome. I thought it was really good. Of course, commercials breaking it up aside, I thought it flowed well. It had some hard-hitting moves. Jordan got the face in peril, you know, but didn't stick to that. He also had some power moves. It was cool. It was good. But it was average, and then it was brought below average because of the expectations, or lack thereof, from the audience, both at home and on TV. And it's an issue that I think they either ignore or just don't care about, because it happens a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I feel like the biggest problem in this regard here is the fact that they're constantly shoving the guy down our throats. They're constantly saying, hey, look at him, he's going to be the next big thing here on the... Okay, bad turn of phrase there with next big thing with Lesnar on the show, but regardless... He's going to be the next huge superstar on the Monday Night Raw brand. Pay attention to this guy. He's going places. How about you actually let him get there before you tell us where he's going? How about you let us actually make the decision ourselves as fans before you decide how far you want to shove him down our throats? It's the same thing that caused so many different people to rebel against Roman Reigns. It's being regurgitated all over again with Jason Jordan.
I mean, it simply is. It just, that is, the commentary team itself, The way that they sell things, whether they assume that this is a tried and true tradition or this is just what you're supposed to, I mean, when there's no one else to compare it to, there's no, you know, I mean, like Andrew started the show with, WCW is dead, you know? And from what I remember, although I was younger, I don't remember the commentary team being as exuberantly obvious that they are over-exaggerating every single aspect of every wrestler like they do in the WWE, specifically Cole. And by, you know, by proxy, Booker T, who, I mean, he's in a league of his own with just randomness. I don't even know what, I don't even know what to say about Booker T. He's literally just, if he was gone, it wouldn't matter. And that's never a good sign, commentary team or any team to be, you know, to be more exact, any group of anything. If that person is missing and you won't miss him, then there's a problem. And really, the only thing, the only person I would miss is Corey Graves.
Well, see, that's, I think that's Booker T's point, is that Booker T is the comedic relief, but you don't need that on commentary. You would need that, like, in an actual show, like the main focus of the show. You could use a comic relief when you have a three-man booth or a three-man kind of dichotomy, but, you know, I don't know. Like, if you took away Booker, then you'd have, what, Corey busting on Cole all the time because he doesn't seem like he's got much more to his character aside from being snarky and insulting people. Like, that'll get old real quick. And, you know, Cole is just Cole, and he's been Cole for, like, the last, what, 15 years. Like, that's not going to change. So, and sadly, he's almost necessary.
I'm going to disagree with you, Andrew, and here's why. A, in order for Booker to be comic relief, he'd have to actually be funny, which he's not. B, as far as Corey Graves goes, Corey Graves has done some of the best announcing work in recent years in the WWE, because when Corey Graves isn't busting Michael Cole's balls or talking shit to Byron Saxton, Corey Graves is able to put over the product in a way that Tom Phillips, Michael Cole, Byron Saxton, Booker T, and to even an extent Mauro Ranallo wish they could.
Mamma mia.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, most of what Corey says is just always derogatory or smarmy. And sure, when he makes the point, he makes the point. But most of what he says is always an insult. And whenever they cut to the booth, Booker says something dumb, or he trips over a word, or just makes up a word, or flip-flops on his stance on a wrestler, and they all start to either laugh during commentary, or they laugh on camera when they cut to him. So someone finds it funny, even if it's that awkward kind of where do we go from here because you're stupid funny, but it is amusing to somebody, and I'm assuming it's probably amusing to Vince. That's why he's still there. So that's the problem with comedy is subjective. And it seems like whoever's, you know, coming up with who the comedy the commentary booth should be, they think that Booker has a good point. And he is kind of better than Byron or Otunga, so it's a toss-up.
Yeah,
I would disagree.
You know, it's probably the same guy that anal features was funny. So you can't really expect too much.
I mean, everybody knows that Vince kind of has a sophomoric sense of humor. So every interview has always said his sense of humor is different and borderline childish. So it probably is a lot of him pushing for Booker over somebody else.
And I mean, if we get back to Jordan specifically, it's more or less the storytelling mode. And Andrew, you're going to hear something similar to this a lot on this show. It is their inability to write correctly. And I don't mean correctly in, like, you're doing it in a way that would get a bad grade in school, but simply in a way that engages your audience on a consistent basis. Now, see, I will readily admit that I watch Raw because I have to write for 411mania.com, and I have a podcast that is adherent to it. However, I do question the idea, would I be watching it if I didn't have these two responsibilities? I don't know. And I think the main reason, and Jordan is a prime example of this, is that the storytelling itself is very, very weak and unbelievable and oftentimes hammered over the head. And that's not good, whether you're watching a TV show or reading a book. An example I use a lot is Walter White from Breaking Bad. You did not get one episode that started off with saying, this is Walter White. He's a really, really bad guy. He was once a really, really good guy, but now he's a really, really bad guy who does really, really bad things, and you're not supposed to like him. And if you do, you should probably question your internal monitoring of your morals, because that means that you may also be a very, very flawed human being. There was no preamble. There was no, you know, it was you taking in what was on television and saying, holy shit, and just getting your mind blown. Wrestling doesn't do that. It just doesn't. And it's because of the way that it's portrayed, whether it be something as simple as Jason Jordan being Kurt Angle's son, to something more specific like a commentary team. You know, the WWE is a wrestling product that has commentary. Breaking Bad does not have a commentary track that you can listen to while you're watching the show. So there's a very distinctive difference. But if we do have a commentary team, then they're supposed to do something. They're supposed to enhance the product and the person that's on the television. I just don't think that they enhanced Jordan. I think that they oversold him to begin with, and now we're dealing with the repercussions of that overselling. And that's why today the match that was pretty good came off as like, well...
I agree with all those points, yeah.
That being said, we got to move further details here. Obviously, we got a whole lot to cover here with this being our first show back and there being three of us. So we're going to go ahead and go into Harry's hit here. And, Tony, you and I talked about this when we weren't doing shows the last couple of weeks, about how Samoa Joe's promo work recently, and especially once he's been put back into this featured storyline against Roman Reigns, have been straight fire lately.
True.
We talked about the fact that Samoa Joe pointed out to Renee Young, without actually overtly saying it out loud, that Dean Ambrose will not have to be a stay-at-home husband. He'll be able to spend the holidays at home with those he loves close, staring at Renee as he said it on Christmas Day, even though Renee was obviously at work there. Now, Samoa Joe even takes it a step further with tonight's promo, stating that, and using the exact verbiage of stay-at-home husband relying on his wife's salary to support him, once again staring at Renee Young the entire time. The crowd strongly reacts to this, but commentary proceeds to blow it by Michael Cole coming straight out and saying, by the way, Dean Ambrose is married to Renee Young. Really, Michael? Have we gotten to the point where we've lost all traces of subtlety in our storytelling?
Yeah.
Have we gotten to the point where we have to be, and as Tony just said a few seconds ago, so thoroughly hammered over the head with things that it becomes so dumbed down to the LCD, the lowest common denominator of wrestling fans, that the people who would enjoy this storytelling on a much more mental level or having themselves taken out of it by having it bashed over our heads. Samoa Joe's character work has been amazing the last 3 weeks with his feud with Roman Reigns here, and yet I find myself unable to enjoy it because of the fact that they're having this opportunity to tell this advanced story and then so casually throwing it away with commentary beelines. Andrew, your thoughts on the Samoa Joe story arc over the last couple of weeks? Specifically his promo work.
I mean, his promos have been good almost entirely since his TNA days, too. Like, he's had some amazing promos against, you know, Styles and Nash back then, and he's not known to be good on the mic. When you give him something to run with, he's fantastic. And be it in the beginning of when he got called up and he was kind of doing the mafioso kind of promo style and being very confident and using educated words, to now when it's coming out where he's just more aggressive and more in your face and just unrelenting. Like, it's really nice that he's evolved over the year just via his promo style, because everybody knows that Joe is going to kill you and everybody knows he's a monster. But the fact that he was a monster with a brain and now he's becoming a little less methodical but more aggressive is just nice to see the change and evolution in his character, which I think is what helps protect him during some of these losses or awkwardly booked matches because he still comes off looking like $1 million, regardless of if he wins or loses, because of the character work he's throwing in there.
Tony, same question. Your thoughts on the character work of Samoa Joe over the course of the last couple of weeks?
Samoa Joe is from Huntington Beach, California. Samoa Joe is Samoan. Samoa Joe is a man named Joe. Samoa Joe is one of the most believable people that I've seen in wrestling for a very long time. If you want a juxtaposition, you watch any Joe promo, and WWE specifically, including tonight, and you feel the authenticity from it. You feel that is a man that's pissed. If he was being interviewed by Renee Young or Harry Broadhurst, he would be saying the same shit. And then you go a little bit later in the show to a locker room where Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns are talking, and Roman is cracking his knuckles with his little man bun, saying stuff like, "You don't do that to a brother. Joe's a joke. Joe is a fool." It's very stilted. It comes off as cliches. It's words that don't seem cool. They're written to be cool. Whereas Joe just doesn't give a fuck if you think he's cool or not. Joe's the guy that you better believe when he says, "I'm going to beat your ass." Reigns is the guy who, no matter how big he is, he could say something to me and I'm just going to be like, "No, you're not," because you don't want to mess up your hair. So there is a very distinct difference in delivery, and I think the difference is, it's trust. It's saying, you know what, Samoa Joe, you've been doing this for a long time. Do your thing. You got some bullet points you need to hit, but by and large, this promo is yours. Versus Reigns, you really, really suck at this. So read this script, remember it, and say it word for word. And it's very, very interesting to see the difference between two moments like that. And which one causes a reaction from the crowd more so. When Reigns speaks in cliches, when he speaks in short sentences that are essentially equivalent to, you know, tags that could be on a T-shirt, taglines that could be on a T-shirt, versus Joe, who was just, you know, pure vitriol and just succinct carnage in verbal form, it's not hard to see which one works and which one doesn't. When Reigns says his statements, you hear little kids pop at the end where the period is. When Joe says his statements, you're like, "Oh, fuck." There's even a pause before you react because you're blown away. Not like, "Oh, wow, you just blew my mind," but like, "Damn, okay, well, he's taking this shit seriously." And I just, again, there is a very distinct difference. And that's why Joe's promo work is what it is right now, because you believe him.
Honestly, I would say the only person whose promo work and their belief in their own abilities and their ability to shit talk their opponents, the only person in the WWE who I'd even put in Samoa Joe's league right now is The Miz.
No, The Miz
is awesome.
I can't
wait for All right, that takes us into the match itself. Samoa Joe taking on Roman Reigns for the Intercontinental title, where if Roman Reigns gets disqualified, he loses the title here. I actually thought this was a pretty good match here, guys. I thought they had a much better match tonight than they did last week on Raw. At the same time, though, I think having seen them work together before, they're capable of more than what they gave us tonight. But at the same time, I was not disappointed with what we got here. Andrew, what were your thoughts on the IC title match from tonight's episode?
I mean, I thought it was the best match on the show. It was well worked. Joe had a lot of good character work just in the ring and good psychology, and the way he kept bad mouthing Reigns and, you know, telling him to hit him or, you know, trying to coax him into using weapons or use the stairs that time. Like, it was a lot of mind games by Joe, but still proving that he's a badass and he could still take on Roman toe to toe for the most part. And it was a pretty damn good match, but I agree that it felt like they were holding a little bit back. But it wasn't disappointing at all. Like, it went well, it flowed nicely, and the ending was kind of what we were expecting, because most people assume that Roman and Brock are kind of headed for a collision at Mania, so you have to kind of keep both of them looking strong.
Tony.
You know, this is a personal thing. I really wish that Reigns would have I wish the match would have never been booked, because I didn't want Samoa Joe to have to say that you know, Reigns has beaten him. I kind of like the idea of someone having Reigns' number every single time they match up, because it holds something. It's that one weakness where if you have a match, there's a suspension of belief that Reigns is not going to win. When you have a Roman Reigns match, you know he's going to win, period. You're not surprised. You're not excited. It's just going to happen. But when he faces Joe, you're like, oh, shit. Well, he's probably going to lose this one. And it gets you kind of pumped. So having Joe lose was kind of like, oh, man, not a big deal. Not a big deal at all because the match was amazing. It was pretty stellar. this will go in the column of proving that Reigns actually does and can wrestle really well. You know, something that I think a lot of people take for granted because they're readily they're always ready to just, you know, put the guy down. And I'm not one to blow Reigns up, but at the same time, a good match is a good match, and this was one of them. Good psychology, good verbal cues as well as nonverbal. Good, just all around a joy to watch. Even if Joe did not win.
Yeah, I don't think Roman gets the credit that he deserves as a worker, but I think a lot of that goes back to what we talked about earlier with what they're doing with Jason Jordan. And the fact of the matter is Jason Jordan's much in the same boat, that he's not getting the credit that he deserves as a worker for the matches that he's been putting on recently either. You get us to a certain expectation point with these people that they're never going to live up to the hype and the precedent that you yourself set for them. That being said, though, like I mentioned earlier, I do think that we've seen better matches from them against each other before, but this was, and I will agree with what Andrew said, the best match on tonight's episode of Raw. Well, maybe the second best match on tonight's episode of Raw. We'll touch on that in a second here. And with that, we go to the debut of a new segment here on the Raw Reaction. As longtime listeners of the show will remember that Rich had the Cajun Corner. Jimmy C. had Fat Ass Facts. Robert had Taylor Made. We now take you to the ballast point. Andrew, the floor is yours.
All right. So the point being made tonight is finally the WWE gives the IWC what they've been clamoring for the last 2 years, and that's the kind of reuniting of the founders of the Bullet Club by putting Finn together with Guns and Gallows. And it was nice to see. And as much as it literally blew up wrestling Twitter, I felt like this kind of ties back to what we talked about earlier in the show. And that's just them not really respecting subtleties and not telling an accurate story, because if they slow rolled that and if they had Finn show up first after Elias and the Miztourage did their thing in the ring, and then he kind of paused and waited for his partners to come down, and it was revealed to be, you know, the club, and then they had their big kind of reunion moment, and then they did all their cool, the magic killer into the coup de grace spot, yada, yada, yada. I think that would have just popped the crowd so much harder instead of a just kind of a throwaway, like, walk behind him. Yeah, I found my partners. Hey, here they are. Whoop-de-doo. It's like the crowd didn't pop that hard. It was backstage segments usually are kind of hit or miss when it comes to crowd reaction. And if they really, really wanted that almost fourth wall kind of rub and just to kind of acknowledge the IWC and what everybody's been clamoring for, I think they could have pulled it off a little better, but all in all, it's still nice to see that they did that. And if it was one night only, that's kind of cool, but it'd be even better if it was leading towards some kind of refactionization of the WWE, with maybe the Shield sticks together after Ambrose comes around, the Miztourage could stick together, maybe Balor Club, Bullet Club, whatever they're going to call them, and something else kind of happens, like, that would kind of be a nice starting point. But either way, it was a nice New Year's moment to kind of have the Bullet Club reunite.
Tony.
Yeah, you know, I don't really like Gallows and Anderson in terms of what they've done over the last year or so. I don't think that saying nerds loudly is funny. they've been pretty, you know, uneventful in terms of them being heels. But keeping with Andrew's point, this is yet another example of not properly utilizing tools that you already have, especially considering how hard they're trying to just destroy any member of the Bullet Club outside of the WWE. I mean, in California alone, I have seen Bullet Club shirts more and more over the past 5 to 6 months than I have in a very long time. And every time I see one, I throw up the Too Sweet sign, and they always do it back. And I do this for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm a big-ass nerd. But two, because it's like
nerd.
A little... exactly, yeah. They know. They know. I know. We know. We both know. We share this. Of course, everyone around us is like, what the fuck? Did they just kiss with their hands? I don't know what that was. Are you okay? So now you translate this to WWE, and it's almost as if they're saying, haha, we have the biggest platform and we could literally do whatever we want with this. I mean, and then you amplify that annoying level of ownership with Michael Cole just being stupid as fuck and ending the segment with how sweet it is. Shut up. But no, the main point, the focal point here is their lack of ability to tell a good story yet again. This could have been stretched for months. This could have been stretched for weeks. It could have been stretched for an entire show, but it wasn't. The delivery was horrible. The presentation was bad. It's, oh, did you find your two partners? Oh, wow, okay, it's them. Yay. And then they have a match, which is average. We know who's going to win. It happens. I will say this. I do think that this was not a one-time thing. I know it's a weird reason to believe this, but the way that the camera stayed on them for a little longer than they should have kind of makes me believe that this is not a one-off. It's also something that I think keeps Finn busy because they're not pushing him and he's not over, I guess, according to the internet. So I don't know if this is a one-off thing. This may just be my instincts kicking in, but I have a feeling we might see them team up again, especially considering this moment essentially means that they're face, marking, I think, the second or third face turn on Raw that mattered zilch, matters at nothing at all. So, yeah, this was – I agree with Andrew completely in the aspect that this was yet another showing of a moment that could have been huge and instead was whimpered out because of their inability or just complete lack of care of something that would have, you know, been amazing. It blew up the internet. You could have blew up your casual audience too if you did it right because they latch on to anything. Have you ever been to a wrestling show? People will chant shit just because someone next to them did. This is not a hard crowd to manipulate, and yet they struggle with it every week. I don't get it.
Well, I'm actually going to say what I think is going to be the forefront here, and I'm going to call this well in advance here. And if I end up being wrong, then I will eat crow on air and say that I was wrong with this statement here. But I actually feel like this is the beginning of something much, much bigger. I honestly feel like this is the beginning of the returning of Finn Balor back to the WWE Universal title. And I believe that this is the beginning of Balor returning to the Universal title, and he's going to return to such with Anderson and Gallows as his henchmen. They're going to start all nicey-nicey with the crowds and everything here, but eventually Balor's going to get more and more frustrated with where he's at from a character perspective here, and he's going to start lashing out, and he's going to start taking shortcuts, and he's going to start taking opportunities wherever he can get them, and it's going to lead to him using his association with Anderson and Gallows to help lead him back to the promised land and the title opportunity that he never got his one-on-one return match for him, as he pointed out to Kurt Angle in that backstage segment you guys mentioned earlier. And I feel like it's going to happen as early as SummerSlam.
Well, that's possible.
Tony, any thoughts there?
Well, like I said, I don't think this was a one-off thing. I won't create a six-month synopsis like you just did, but I do see, you know, something happening with them that doesn't end tonight.
Yeah, you know how I love my fantasy booking, Tony.
Yeah. My only fantasy book, Sexual Escapades.
Or read about them in Adult Stars books with, never mind, moving on. How'd that go over, by
that
the
was
way?
That was for Vanessa, and she was actually very excited about it.
Yes, she was. All right, moving on. Let's get into the Raw recap. This is everything that we don't touch on in our Let's Talk About Raw segments or our own personal individualized segments here. So we start with Bray Wyatt defeating Apollo Crews with Sister Abigail in a decent little match there. Bray Wyatt is then interrupted by Woken Matt Hardy, and Michael Cole is yet again trying to do his best to shit on this. Andrew, you start us off.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
I don't know where to go with that, really, because Cole kind of takes the piss out of every Woken, Broken, Bray kind of segment for, like, the last 3 weeks. He goes way too over the top with the breaking and the broken references, and then Corey tries to save it with, you know, reminding him that it's Woken. And, I don't know, I just wish they wouldn't talk during this, because the segment itself was a little odd. Because it wasn't Matt's best work with this character, but somewhat amusing and entertaining. So I'm not going to, you know, shit on it. But, yeah, the announcers just should not talk during this angle.
Yeah, well, good luck with that one. Tony?
Yeah, the announcers shouldn't talk for half of the show, at least. So I have zero experience with the broken Matt Hardy, aside from what I've looked up. And a distinctive difference that I've noticed is that from what I've seen on the TNA side and on the indie side of things is that everybody kind of took this character seriously. I mean, yeah, he's weird as shit, but like there was a sense of fear and trepidation when you approached him. On Raw, you have Michael Cole acting like Matt Hardy's just crazy. And if, you know, if that's what we're to believe, because essentially what I always see the commentary team as is you are telling us what is happening under the impression that we are not smart enough to understand it. So you're saying Matt Hardy's just crazy. You're just nuts. Well, okay, maybe you could have said that on week one. He cracked. I don't know what the hell happened. He cracked. But you can't keep telling me that he's crazy because we have to sign on to this. We have to latch on to it. This is not a temporary character shift until Jeff Hardy comes back. At least I hope not. This is a new version of Matt. When you had V1 come out, you didn't say, you know, this guy used to wear tight pink or tight purple shirts and studded belts. You didn't say that. You said, this is Matt Hardy. This is his new iteration. You don't look at The Rock and say, you know, this is Blue Chip or Maivia. You don't look at Farouk and say, you know, from the APA and say that, you know, he is the same guy from the Nation of Domination. This is a completely new book. This isn't a new chapter. So why do you keep referring to the former Matt Hardy if this is what we're supposed to be latching onto? You're minimizing and diminishing the character that he has created and took so much time and effort to bring to your product. And for the most part, it's working. And the only person that's hurting it is you. And by you, I mean the WWE.
And by the WWE, he means Michael Cole.
Walk with Elias.
Hey, that made me chuckle, actually.
Yeah, I want to know why it took eight fucking months for them to figure that one out. Dummies.
I somehow doubt anybody in creative came up with that. I feel like that was Elias' doing.
I hope so.
All right, that moves us on into the women's match from tonight's episode of Raw as Alexa Bliss took on Asuka. Tony, is it just me or is this absolute sheer stupidity to give away what, in my opinion, should have been your Raw women's title match at WrestleMania?
I mean, honestly, and I may be the only person that believes this, but I think giving Asuka any important match right now is stupid. She's going to lose eventually, and it's not something that I want to see unless it's a huge deal. You're sticking her in matches that, you know, you kind of have to assume she's going to win. because any other notion behind that doesn't make sense. I didn't mind tonight's match. I actually thought it was really good. Have you ever seen a match that you're like, oh, people are going to find this pretty boring, but I love it? It happens to me at almost every indie show. Like, I just get fully invested, and I'm like, man, they're fucking trying. Like, this is good shit. But I look around, and I'm like, oh, they're not really interested. It doesn't put me in a higher standard. It's not me saying I'm better than anybody or I see things that other people don't. It's simply saying I don't have to say that. It simply just is. But there's certain matches that you're just emotionally involved in, and you're like, oh, shit. Like, the way that I saw tonight was Alexa is still new, is still fresh in terms of wrestling. Character development, she's fine. She's got her shit down. That's who she is. But in the ring, kind of hit or miss for the most part. And I'm like, damn, she's legit trying with Asuka. Like, I don't know. I was impressed. So I was able to remove the emotional, like, oh, this shouldn't even be a match. But I get where you're coming from, and I totally agree with the idea that, like, this could have been a big deal. This could have been as big as, you know, the Bullet Club reforming. It could have been as big as Matt Hardy becoming broken or woken. All of these things, it's just lack of common sense, I think, and delivery, and realizing what you already have at hand. You don't need to recreate the wheel, especially if you're the only one that has the fucking wheel.
Andrew. No, yeah, Tony brings up some good points. And Alexa was actually really impressive in this match. Like, the first half was more character work from her, being kind of standoffish, scared. But we've seen that so much with other women, too, when it just turns into her being calculated and trying to find an opening. I mean, for months, I've kind of compared her to, like, the female Edge. And by that, I mean back when he was Mr. Opportunity. And, you know, he'd find any angle just to kind of screw somebody or to, you know, get his shit in or, you know, get the win somehow by any means necessary. That's kind of how Alexa is. And I liked how the match was worked, but I just didn't like the fact it was with Asuka. Because when you have her be this undefeated Goldberg streak monster type character, like, you don't want her to be in a decent match, in a sense, like, so early. Like, that's why the whole Emma thing kind of killed her initial debut, because that was a somewhat competitive match when she came in with all this pomp and circumstance about just being a monster who just buzzsaw kick everybody's head off and just, you know, kill the entire women's division. And this was, it's odd, because the story the match told was fine. The fact that Alexa is the champion means she should have been a bigger threat or a bigger challenge. So on paper, the motions that they went through all made sense for it to be Asuka's biggest challenge so far. But much like Tony said, where Alexa's still kind of green, all things considered, Alexa's not seen as Asuka's level in, you know, most people's perception, even though she's a four-time champion or whatever it is and the current champion. People still don't see her as a legitimate wrestler or a legitimate threat. So perception-wise, I can see why people were not high on it and bored and probably didn't like it. But as a match, it was fine. Like I said, the storytelling was really good. I just really wish it wasn't Asuka, because if that didn't really help her character at all. It did well for Alexa, but I don't really see how that helps Asuka, aside from giving her the win and making her seem like she deserves a title match now.
All right, so I wanted to say my thoughts for last year, because I kind of teased this opinion a little bit earlier on in the show. You guys were talking about the fact that you thought that Joe versus Reigns was the best match on the card tonight. I actually disagree. I think Alexa and Asuka was the best match on tonight's card, and I feel like that comes to me from a perspective of both the character work that Alexa put in for this match, as well as the actual in-ring story that they told between the two ladies as well. My biggest takeaway from this match here is this could have been a WrestleMania-worthy women's title match, and nobody would have batted an eye, but to give it away this early into the year on a free television show bothered me.
All right. The only other thing that we have to discuss for our Raw recap here, I almost called it the Raw Rebound because I've been watching too many old school episodes of Raw on the network lately, is the Cruiserweight division with 205 Live. You know, Tony, we've been saying for months on this show that 205 Live needs to interact more with the main roster. Was this the way to go about it?
I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just, wasn't Goldust beaten on some other black guy earlier this year?
I believe so. His name was R-Truth.
Yeah. So wasn't, I mean, what happened? Was, did the movie not do well, Goldust? Is that, I don't, what? and therein lies the issue. You've got months full of cruiserweight action, and then you bring someone in who doesn't really matter, has star power, but the last time we saw him, he was, beating up his ex-partner with a cameraman. Did we forget about that? Are we avoiding that? Is that, is this a new Goldust? He did have spiked hair, so maybe I should have known that this was a new Goldust. I don't know. It just, it's just good idea, bad execution.
He was a woken Goldust is what he was, Tony.
He was broken.
Andrew, your thoughts on the Cedric Alexander Goldust versus Arya Daivari Drew Gulak tag match?
Yeah, it was just really superfluous. Like, Goldust, it's fine. Like, you were bringing up, I don't mind them bringing in other people. So I'd like to see 205 Live interact more with the Raw roster, but Goldust is not the right way to go. Like, the most we've seen of him is the online little vignettes with him trying to woo Asuka to be his mixed match challenge partner. And before that, he was, the natural at Starrcade? And then we really haven't seen Goldust since then. And, of course, since the R-Truth stuff. But it's not the right way to go. But you remember the Animaniacs and how they had that whole segment called Good Idea, Bad Idea? Well, this is very similar to that.
I was more of a Tiny Toons.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Really? You weren't an Animaniacs guy? God damn it. That was the shit.
Tony, Animaniacs or Tiny Toons?
Yo. Oh, Animaniacs for sure.
See, he knows what's up.
That was smart television for kids.
I'm completely outnumbered here. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our final. Let's talk about Raw for the night here. Let's get into the conversation of what will be your main event for the Royal Rumble, the triple threat match between the Beast Brock Lesnar, the Monster Brock, I turned into Booker T, the Beast Brock Lesnar, the Monster Among Men Braun Strowman. Yes, that was intentional before anybody tries to yell at me. And the devil's favorite demon came here. Tonight we only see one of them in action. That would be Braun Strowman, who absolutely decimates the tag team of Heath Slater and Rhino, because why the fuck not? And then we end up seeing all three men involved in this match a little bit later on in the main event segment here. So let's start with the Braun Strowman versus Rhino match a little bit earlier on in the show here. Andrew, your thoughts on the Rhino-Strowman match?
I mean, it was a squash match with theatrics. I thought it was weird that Rhino came out to Heath Slater's music and not his own music. And then apparently Braun cutting a tiny promo on Heath telling him to shut up or get in the ring is enough to make the referee be okay with a unofficial handicap match and not throw out the match. But he's over. So like the 9,000 power slams afterwards were fine. And it was entertaining just to watch him kill two people, but it was a throwaway segment.
Tony, your thoughts on Braun Strowman telling Heath Slater that he could catch these hands?
Andrew said throwaway. That's what Braun did tonight. that's just the common colloquialism you use if you want to, throw down with someone. I'm pretty sure I've said it once or twice. No, it was cool. It's little things like that that make him a little bit more real, even though he's supposed to be this huge, gigantic monster. Like, that's like, oh, shit, Heath, you're about to get destroyed, homie. Like, you're about to, wow, you're about to catch these hands. So, yeah, it was cool. It Booker T, you know, piggybacking off of it and laughing was the right person to respond. It was great. I didn't mind this at all. I mean, it, for once, you know, because, you know, I don't really like squash matches. When Ryback was around, I hated him for numerous reasons, but one of those reasons was that it ultimately, like, it got to a point where it was annoying. But Braun has become something completely different. And you coincide that with the idea that Rhino and Heath have been going with this little mini storyline of being tougher and stronger. It just made perfect sense. This is what works. This worked really well. I really enjoyed that tie-in. And yeah, it's always fun to see Braun kill people. And this was probably one of the most alive segments from the crowd, like, the entire night. They were on their feet.
The other segment that had the crowd really alive for this show here was your main event segment, which had your god in mind, Paulie Dangerously, a.k.a. Paul Heyman, in the ring hyping up Brock Lesnar. First of all, complaining about the fact that it's a triple threat match, and once again, there are challengers for Brock Lesnar. But more specifically, hyping up the fact that it really doesn't matter if you put 1, 2, 4, 8, 10, 20 men in the ring with Brock Lesnar, even an entire damn Royal Rumble, Lesnar's walking away the champion. Kane has something to say about this. Kane comes down to the ring and confronts Lesnar and proceeds to lay him out with a choke slam, to which Brock Lesnar, in the ultimate badassery move of the evening, in my opinion, Kane sits up out of it, which I thought was hilarious. They once again start to brawl after Lesnar knocks Kane over the top rope with a title belt assisted clothesline until the entire locker room clears out to separate them per general manager angle. Go ahead, Tony. You know you want to.
You know, if brawl would have ended with Brock cackling at Kane while Kane walked backwards up the ramp, I would have been okay with that. I would have been, kind of cheesy, but that was great. That was funny. I like the idea of Brock sitting up. It reminds me of when he laughed at Taker and then Taker laughed back at him. It would have been a nice callback. It's great. Yeah, but then you have, like, seven jobbers come down and graciously carry Kane back to the back. There wasn't even a pull apart that I could complain about because they just, hey, go get Kane. He's being a go get him. So, all right, well, let's go get him. You know, I mean, never mind that Rhino got power slammed like three fucking times. He's still able to go out there and bring Kane to the back. Never mind that Kurt Hawkins is Kurt fucking Hawkins. He's still able to go out there and bring Kane to the back. And why would any of these people give a shit that Kane is up there? They don't care. Why would they care? Oh, because Kurt Angle said? Oh, right, because we're on Raw, and Raw's so united that they won't even advertise SmackDown. Oh, wait, they do that now. But didn't they just have a Survivor Series match over supremacy of this entire WWE brand? Wow, this is so complex. Stop, you idiots. No, the whole pull-apart brawl thing is just tired, overused, annoying, makes zero sense. But that didn't even happen tonight. There was no pull-apart at all. It was like going to get your retarded older brother from the playground because he's going to beat up someone. Like, let's go. Come on. I don't get it. I don't get when they write this stuff. I feel like they dip their hand into a hat and say, how are we going to end tonight? Oh, pull apart brawl. All right, cool. Let's do that. But let's make it different. Let's just have seven people go out there and just bring Kane to the back. In no way was this a good ending to Raw. And really, if they would have ended it 2 minutes, maybe even 1 minute before that, it would have been a good ending. I don't know who makes these decisions.
Andrew?
I agree. The weird pull apart at the end was bad. It also looked like the jobbers hit the ring basically before Brock even hit Kane over
they
the
did.
Rope with the title. Okay. I wanted to make sure
did.
I just didn't see that funny. So it's like that was a dead giveaway that it was just a weird ending. And then how, like, just like you were saying, suspension of disbelief, like how can a bunch of people that just got killed or suck like Kurt Hawkins be able to pull away somebody who's supposed to be a monster going up against Braun and, you know, Brock. But yeah, that's the WWE for you. And I don't know. I was not really feeling the end promo either. Like, that was such a generic Brock Lesnar-Paul Heyman promo. Like, I'm pretty sure I took my trash out and came in just to see, like, Kane come out. But, like, it was a bad 15 minutes.
Yeah, man.
Okay,
I love
new
Heyman.
Guy.
Everything Heyman says is great.
I was just about to say, okay, new guy, one of the rules of the show is you don't disrespect Paul Heyman.
Yeah, but my statement comes with a but. everything Paul Heyman says is great. He's leaps and bounds beyond anybody that's on the show, with the exception of maybe one or two people who can at least meet his level of awesomeness. However, you can only say what he said tonight so many times before you're like, okay, so, well, he's just meeting the obligatory date in which Brock has to be there. The way he delivers it, the passion that he has, the way he speaks, how he carries it out, all of that is amazing. But again, he's not saying anything new, even when he says it in a different language. We've heard Paul speak Latin already. So, like, you can't knock the guy because he's Paul Heyman, you know? But at the same time, you're like, okay, well, I guess it's up to Braun to make this match interesting because Kane is Kane. And, you know, Heyman already did his, you know, one promo, a program, you know, moment. So what's next? I mean, they literally, you look at your Brock feuds, what do you have? You have pull apart brawl, Heyman promo, another pull apart brawl, maybe a couple of suplexes, one finishing move to Brock in which he gets up about 5 seconds, and that's it. You put all that in the hat, pick one, and you're good to go. I mean, that's what I feel like they do.
So basically,
yeah,
they ran
the
gamut of it tonight.
Yeah, they went through the whole thing.
They don't have much left in the hat for 3 weeks to win.
Well, that's okay, because the last week before the pay-per-view is going to be a Major League Fluff show, with it being the anniversary show.
True.
Last week that is going to be everybody in the damn ring at once, because we've never seen that before.
It's a contract signing.
Oh,
it's a three-way contract signing.
A three-way contract signing, and everyone's going to come out to pull all of those three apart, and Cole's going to say the word melee at least twice, and we're going to hear the words chaos, and we're going to hear the words rumble, and that's it.
But will
and
we
Booker
hear vintage?
T's gonna sound, and Booker T's going to sound drunk, because that's what Booker does.
He's going to give us at least three mms.
As long as we don't get a shucky ducky quack quack, I think I'm square. Do we have anything else to add here before we go home?
If you go to Maurice's Instagram, she's at a dinner table with Miz, and one of the comments is Nia Jax saying, "Look at them boobies," with a emoji of a glass of milk. That's great.
I don't even know what to say to that.
Tony just ruined the rest of my life. I'm going to Maurice's Instagram right after we're done with the show.
This is great.
And I say this is somebody who doesn't do a whole lot in the way of social media. Andrew, you write for them more constantly than I do. I'm mostly on the website through the podcast. Do you know the specific website for the chair shot?
It's thechairshot.com.
It is thechairshot.com. Greg has changed the name of this website four times within the last calendar year. Forgive me for being lost.
I understand.
Greg.
He's filled me in a little bit, yeah.
In addition, you can talk to myself, Tony, and Andrew over on Yes Wrestling on Facebook by searching for Yes Wrestling on Facebook or just going to facebook.com/YesWrestling. Tony, they can find you on 411 as well, can't they?
Yeah, you can find me on 411mania.com. I'm probably the best thing that they got going over there. Yeah, big shout out to him, who's been doing this for quite some time. The Ask 411 Wrestling column. The only other time he stepped away from it, the internet blew up and destroyed who was a temporary replacement. Said temporary replacement was a horrible writer and still is. But so he came back And but this is his official retirement party. They do have a replacement. I'm hoping that they that he's treated, you know, much better than the previous one. But yeah, I'm still at 411. I have no signs or intentions of leaving. I have a lot of projects that I'm working on this year, and I'll be announcing here first. So you guys can stay tuned for that. You can also, you know, you can. I'm everywhere. My name is. I own my name. You can Google me. It's gonna be me. So. Have fun.
Has anything further come from your series with Archibald?
Yeah, we may be finding a new home for it, just due to a couple of reasons. Lack of, I want to say, proper participation and or placement. I consider this to be a big deal, and if it's not going to be treated as such, then I won't just readily give it away. So that could be in the works pretty soon. I do think that there is a particular home for it that Greg may know of.
In other words, are you listening, Larry? Can you hear us? Anyway, let's go into the final reaction, gentlemen. Longtime listeners of the show know what this is. For the new guy, let's go ahead and run this down here. It is your favorite match or moment of the evening, your least favorite match or moment of the evening, your overall show rating scale of 1 to 10. We don't do cop-out letter grades on this show. And your most valuable player for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's start with the new guy. Andrew, are you ready?
Sure, why not? So,
all right.
I guess
favorite moment.
Let's just do favorite moment.
Favorite match or moment.
Favorite moment, regardless of execution, will still have to be Bullet Club's reformation, just because of where it might go. This is me holding out hope that this was a seed planted and not for basically what was presented in the show today.
Least favorite match or moment?
Probably the Cruiserweights, because it was an okay little quick match, but the whole dynamic was just awkward.
Overall show rating, scale of 1 to 10.
Do you guys do halves here or no?
Yes.
All right, so I'll give it a 6.5 out of 10.
And in your opinion, who is the most valuable player on tonight's episode of Raw?
It's got to be Samoa Joe. Between the promo, the character work in the ring, a great match with Roman, yeah, I think Joe was the star of the show today.
I find that we're going to say that a lot this calendar year on the Raw reaction. I feel like I'm almost tempted to go back and listen to last year's reactions. And if it's not Joe, it's Miz, but it's definitely one of the two for our overall most valuable player. Thanks, Andrew. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks.
All right, Tony, favorite match or moment?
Yeah, Miz is definitely the MVP of this past year. With regards to my favorite match or moment, I'm going to give it to Alexa and Asuka for a couple of reasons. One of them mainly is because I was unable to watch Reigns and Joe in its entirety. Just to cut it short, my DirecTV went out today, and I don't know why. I literally have no idea why. So 5 minutes before the show started, I turned my TV on, and it's incapable of working. So I went back to the old days of the Raw Report and found a stream. And, of course, as with every stream, did not last very long without fucking up. So with that being said, yeah, I'm going to give it to Alexa.
Least favorite match or moment besides DirecTV? Fuck them.
It's so bad. They didn't know what they were doing. Like, I tried to call while watching Raw online. It was all bad. But anyways, no, the very ending of Raw, I mean, you know how much that shit pisses me off, so.
That's the exact reason I sent the message I did in our chat right before we came on the air, Tony.
Yeah,
overall show rating?
6 out of 10.
And who is your most valuable player for tonight's Raw?
Me. No, I think Joe is a good answer. I think that he's amazing, and he just, yet again, he proved it tonight.
All right, Tony, flip the script because he's a new guy.
All right. It's what's your favorite match or moment from Raw?
I'm actually going to follow on your side of this one. I'm going to go with Asuka and Alexa, like I said earlier. I definitely feel like this is a match that could be used to build something going forward with Alexa down the road, as well as an excellent opportunity for us to showcase Asuka in a feature match against an opponent who's credible, despite how much we personally may have loved Hot Ass Evil Emma on this show. Oh, speaking of which, I have something to tell you after we go, after we finish up with our final reactions, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
Your least favorite match or moment from Raw?
Nothing really stood out as too actively terrible to me. Like, there was some stuff that made me roll my eyes and think to myself, whatever. But there was nothing that actually made me super disappointed in what I saw tonight. So as far as in-ring content goes here, I guess I'll go with the fact that the Balor, Gallows, Anderson six-man tag wasn't treated as a bigger deal than it was.
Mm. Your MVP?
Alexa Bliss.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and your show rating?
I'm right there with you at a 6. I think that there was enough stuff that I was worth the 3 hours that I spent watching it, but it definitely came off as like a holiday episode of the show in which they had a lot going on, but nothing really going on at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the mentality that their pay-per-view is so far away that they don't really need to build up towards it properly, which is a horrible mentality, but alive and well.
Once again, Andrew, thanks for joining us, sir. I greatly appreciate it. Welcome to the family.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you're not that bad.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
He's tolerable. I think we'll keep him. Hey, Tony, guess what?
What?
The Hot Ass Evil One's going to be at a show an hour away from me in February. My happy ass is going.
Nice. Well, tell her I said hi. She'll know who I am.
I'll try to send pictures. The restraining order might prevent it.
Get a good camera.
Get a good zoom lens.
So, for Andrew Balas, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, my name is Harry Broadhurst. This has been the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Tony, send us home once and for all for tonight. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Deuces, bitches.
Now get the guns, the drugs, from my generation. I'll take the fall, the saints across the nation, and it's a sin. The gods, the fiends, the fraud, the messer with me. Come on, come on, come on, let's get it out. Move to the music, play that fucking music. Move it to the music, yeah. Let's get it out. Move to the music, play that fucking music. Let's do my music, yeah. Now get the guns, the drums, the magic.
Great to be back, everybody. See you next week. This has been the first Raw Reaction of 2018. Thanks for listening. So this is the phone line at thechairshot.com. Deuces.